Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Brooklyn Botanic Garden, a stunning 52-acre garden in the heart of Brooklyn, open year-round. Learn more at bbg.org.
Hey, this is Michael Harlan Turkel from the Food Scene on Heritage Radio Network. I've been with the station for over 8 years, 350 shows, and it is the most consistent thing in my life. Every Tuesday at 3, I know to be here in studio, but I also get the privilege of meeting such amazing people, artists, artisans within the industry. Get to learn a new factoid, a new way of life from these wonderful people. And I hope you do too by listening and that you donate to our summer drive. Just go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate and click on the beating heart. And we'd even appreciate monthly recurring donations to any show on the network you could designate to the Food Scene, the Speakeasy, and that many more.
Hi, I'm HRN's Executive Director, Katie Mosman Wadler, with a preview of this week's episode of Meat and Three, our weekly food news roundup. This week's theme is youth. We'll have a report on how migrant children separated from their families at the U.S. border are being housed and fed.
Right now, what we're very worried about is just the influx of kids created by this zero-tolerance policy.
We'll also look into a program that's ensuring free summer meals for kids are only a text message away.
Summer is the hungriest time of year for a kid who may not have that safety net of school meals.
We discover a new home economics curriculum.
I'm not trying to raise a generation of chefs. I'm trying to raise a generation of nourishers who can nourish themselves.
And we meet a teen chef who's talked his way into several of New York's top kitchens.
I never try and be, like, annoying about it, but I really want to get my foot in the door.
Tune in to this week's episode of Meat and Three, available at heritageradionetwork.org and wherever you get your podcasts.
And welcome to Eating Matters, where we talk about food policy and how it impacts all of us. I'm your host, Jenna Liute, and we're broadcasting from Roberta's on Heritage Radio Network. Today, I'm so excited to have Robin Shapiro as a guest in the studio. Robin is a CEO and founder of Seek Food, maker of cricket protein food brands. Seek just launched an exciting new line in partnership with some celebrity chefs as the company looks to make eating insects more mainstream in the West. And I'm so excited this recent development has brought her to the show today. Welcome to Eating Matters, Robin.
Thanks for having me.
I'm so glad you're here in the middle of a giant dance party that is happening in the back of the studio. That's how we roll at Roberta's.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's get right into it. When did you start Seek Food and why?
So I started Seek really to solve some of the world's greatest global health and hunger issues and environmental issues. I was living in Switzerland where I was working, not a bad place to work, and I was next to France and Italy and mm-hmm. was frequently traveling there for professional and personal reasons. So I was kind of like in the food mecca of the world, and it was great. I ate so amazing, and I saw how connected people were to food and to the land, and that the idea of sustainability wasn't a new thing. It was just deeply ingrained, and it had always been like that. Mm-hmm. And that was really in contrast to what I was seeing back in America. I think in general, when you sort of take yourself outside of something, you can have a whole new perspective, and that's how I saw sort of our food system here. So I knew when I moved back, because I was going to move back I never really mastered that French that they were speaking in Geneva, so it made it kind of tricky to remain there much longer. But I was there for 5 years.
Yeah.
And when I moved back, I knew that I wanted to do something to work on the intersection of food and sustainability. We're at a time where there's so much great excitement around food. There's a food radio station.
There's a food radio station. We're on it.
We're on it. There's food TV. Everything. It's blowing up in this great way, but problems are blowing up alongside it.
Yep.
So when I spent some time working at a rooftop farm in mm-hmm. Greenpoint. I spent some time leading a nonprofit in New York called The Low Line. And I really wanted to get closer to the food that people were eating. And I had read a report issued by the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization that mm-hmm. talked about just the massive potential for crickets and other insects. And I was hooked. It just made so much sense to me. And I sought out to introduce that to other people too.
And so what is the actual mission, you know, your mission statement of the company?
Yeah, so our mission is to increase the consumption of cricket protein mm-hmm. As it's extremely nutritious, extremely sustainable, and alongside that, show people how delicious and enjoyable it can be as well.
Why crickets?
Yeah, so
I mean, of all the insects.
Yeah, right? So there are a lot of other insects out there that you can eat. Actually, there's been recorded over 2,000 edible insects have been recorded. And crickets are something that there's already growing awareness about. You know, if I had asked you to name, you know, 10 different edible insects, you know, cricket would probably be your first. And if I went out,
my only.
Yeah.
I think.
And if I went out to the Roberta's dance party, most people would probably, you know, list that one as well. So we have growing awareness about this. And then it's also an insect that doesn't kind of, let's just say, freak people out as much as some other insects.
Yeah.
And there's already knowledge about how to farm insects here. In America and other places around the world, it's a common, actually, food for different reptiles.
Yeah.
So some of those farmers were able to kind of share their knowledge to get human-grade farm operations set up.
So there was already kind of like a...
Knowledge.
Yeah, knowledge about this and a desire to eat it.
Yeah, whereas a lot of those other insects that I talked about, they are sort of eaten in really, really traditional ways.
What are some of those insects?
Well, actually, one of the insects that I think is the most delicious is waxworms. They hang out in beehives, so they feed off of honey.
What is my face right now?
It's not a great face, but you know what? I should say that I love podcasts, and we're on the air, but you don't really have the benefit of seeing our products, which are in front of you.
Yeah.
And I think if someone stopped you on the street and was like, hey, you want to, you know, eat an insect? You'd probably be like, no.
No, hard pass.
But if someone stopped you and you were at some sort of food event and we had our branding and I said, okay, this is our cinnamon almond
the
crunch.
The packaging is beautiful.
All of these things set up and was able to sort of present the larger story for you.
Yeah.
You'd probably have a different reaction.
Well, I'm going to try some of these products on air in a few minutes, so you can walk the listeners through my facial expressions, which I'm fairly emotive, but you know they'll definitely get it from my.
I can't wait to hear what you think because this is your first cricket eating experience.
I'm like a little nervous.
I feel honored.
I'm excited. This is going to be my first experience.
Yeah.
Okay, we're gonna get there. But so crickets were already kind of mainstream. What are some of these benefits? The other insect, the one with the worm.
I mentioned waxworms.
Waxworms, yeah. What do they do?
So waxworms are really interesting. They hang out in honey and beehives, so they're kind of a nuisance to people raising bees, but mm-hmm. they feed off of the honey. They have a really, they don't have an exoskeleton, and they actually have a high fat content. And when you sort of dry roast them in a pan, mm-hmm. to me, they taste like pine nuts. So they're actually so delicious.
Yeah.
I actually read another report that waxworms are actually being studied. Someone saw the waxworms and thought there were some interesting features of them. A scientist who had bees in her backyard thought there were some interesting things and was going to bring them into the lab to test them. Put them in a plastic bag to bring them in. Next thing she notices, they ate through the plastic bag.
Huh.
So there's so many benefits out there about insects. Could we have insects that eat plastic and are able to digest it? Well, yeah. We have a first study that that's happening with waxworms, and the answer is yes. Now, they would have to be a lot of waxworms eating for a lot of time, yeah. But plastic is obviously a huge issue. And when we sort of look at the world of insects, there's so much that can be kind of gained from deepening our studies of them. So it's beyond just food.
Yeah, so it seems like exactly like it's the potential, just as we study this particular class of... What's a class of insects? Class of
insects. Well,
okay. I didn't know if that was like a.
Oh, I don't know the specific sort of term. Yeah, I don't know what sort of specific family they belong to.
Yeah.
But it is estimated that we've only discovered
clearly me either.
that we've only discovered about a tenth of all of the insects out there.
Wow.
Even sort of entomologists who have spent their entire life dedicated to the study of insects have said they feel like they've only scratched the surface and they don't know much. Which. Sure, they're being modest by saying that,
right.
But there's so much to learn and be gained.
So what are the specific health benefits for us when we look at like, and what could crickets kind of like replace in our diet?
Yeah, so crickets have a really amazing nutritional profile. First, we probably know a lot. They're you know, high in protein. That's, you know, I told you our brand is a cricket protein brand. Mm-hmm. So that's the sort of main nutrient that I am highlighting. They're also a complete protein, which is a real rarity for a non-meat product. That means they contain all the essential amino acids that we need to stay strong and healthy.
Mm-hmm.
But their nutritional profile is really kind of incredible beyond that. So they're high in iron, calcium, fiber, omega-3s, B12, magnesium. And it, you know, B12 is sort of like this wonder nutrient, good for, you know, improved skin, energy levels, mood levels. It's actually so important that it just got upgraded and it's now required on the back of the standard nutritional label.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yep.
And it's also something that a lot of people are telling me that I need to... you know, start eating as a, or start consuming as a vitamin.
But you're going to be consuming it in just a few minutes.
yes. This is so beneficial, this conversation. Awesome. So when we talk about like eating, can you kind of just sketch out for us, talk through like, what does it look like when you eat a cricket, right? So we you know, your products, I want you to be able to talk through their product line. But in general, if you were just going to, like, maybe this is a question for sort of worldwide, how are they consumed? Do you just get them and dry roast them? Or how do you, what's the, what is, how do you process crickets?
Yeah, well, I've done probably, you know, everything out there is to do just to kind of feed my own sort of education about this. But all the crickets that we're using in our Seek products, we work with farmers.
Mm-hmm.
So the farmers are raising the crickets in a completely controlled environment. So, yeah, everything is controlled from what they're fed to how they're bred.
Mm-hmm.
And then those farmers are milling them into sort of a fine powder that we use.
Okay.
It's a very sort of basic process that they go through. So essentially they sort of have about a six-week lifespan.
Mm-hmm.
After that, they are frozen,
okay.
Which puts them into sort of a deep slumber, kind of a state of homeostasis.
Mm-hmm.
Another interesting thing about crickets is they actually don't feel pain. At least that's the largest sort of scientific community has come to that conclusion.
Hmm.
They're not biologically engineered to, likely because of that sort of short lifespan.
Yeah.
We are biologically engineered to feel pain because it keeps us out of trouble. Imagine if we didn't feel pain, sort of the extremes that we'd put us to. But they don't need to because they sort of have such a short lifespan. And then after they're frozen, they are heated.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that's sort of what really impacts the flavor of them.
Okay.
I kind of compare it sometimes to coffee beans.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Coffee bean is a coffee bean, but you can roast it in so many different ways and get all of these different flavors.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's the same for crickets.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're milled into a fine powder. And then we use that powder in our different products. So it's really, really versatile. You know, in front of us here, we have, you know, granola and our energy bites.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk a little bit about the blended flours that we're launching.
Mm-hmm.
And you can really do anything with it.
And are there different, when we talk about about like the farms in terms of farming them? What does that actually look like? Are they glass containers, or is it just, you know, like you would farm bees, obviously in a different structure? Do you walk into a facility and there are crickets all over the place? Like, what does this look like?
Yeah, so
what's a farm look like?
Yeah, it's different. So different farmers, but essentially you're seeing sort of some big bins. Mm-hmm. Some of the bins are stainless steel, and some bins are plastic. Mm-hmm. And then in the bins are the crickets. They actually like to stay close together. Hmm. So there's sort of like something similar or actual egg crates, which sort of act as the different sort of levels in the bins. Mm-hmm. And then they're sort of in there, and that's where they sort of, spend their time.
Okay.
I actually know the hard way. I mean, I've always known from hearing from farmers that they like to stay together, but I kind of know the hard way too.
What was that?
Do you want to know?
Yeah, totally.
So I was, I got a shipment of crickets to my, you know, East Village apartment for an event that was coming up, and I was sort of transferring them into, my freezer was broken.
Yeah.
You can even, if you're transferring them, you can even put them in the fridge for a little bit.
Okay.
And then like kind of chill them out.
Yeah.
And then it makes it easier to transfer. Exactly.
Sorry.
So my fridge was broken.
Okay.
So I didn't have anything to cool them with. So I needed to transfer them from sort of one container to another container. No chance to chill them out. And so I just started kind of, you know, guiding them. And they went all over my entire apartment. And they all grouped together. My cat had a field day, and like, so it made it easy to actually collect them, but I collected like these 100 crickets one by one.
Oh my God.
And then I actually left town, and someone was staying at my apartment to cat sit, and I've never talked to her again.
She was like, bye. Oh no. You're like, they're totally harmless and they're delicious.
No, I never told her anything.
Oh my God.
I just think there might have been a couple stragglers. I thought we got them all.
Maybe not, though. Oh, my God. What are cats for, then, is what I want to know. My cat probably would have been like, whatever. I'm bored. Okay, so I think it's time. I think it's time for me to experience.
Yeah.
One or both of these cricket products.
Both, yeah.
Obviously both. I'm, you know, my first question is, you know, do you really taste the cricketness? What does a cricket taste like, right? Is it, you said that the waxworms, you know, if they're toasted, taste similarly to pine nuts, which I love. So is there something kind of comparable, or is it a very neutral, like, you know, flour input once you create, process it?
Yeah, so our goal is to become sort of the entry-level cricket eating brand. Mm-hmm. You're trying this for the first time, and so many other people are out there as well. So we, you know, we want to make that sort of an enjoyable, pleasurable experience, and something that you want to come back for again. So,
right.
Crickets on their own, you know, have a bit of a nutty, earthy flavor.
Okay.
And we're all about the taste with everything. We're a culinary-driven brand. I'm a major foodie. Mm-hmm. I love eating delicious food. I want to share that with other people too. So that's why both of the things you're about to taste now are paired with nuts and seeds to really sort of bring out that sort of flavor.
Mm-hmm.
What you have in your hand right now is our Energy Bites.
It has hemp in it.
It does.
I'm obsessed with
it. It does. So yeah, so that is our coconut cashew energy bites.
Okay.
The crickets are adding over 50% of the protein that is in there. And it's about 10% cricket in that whole product.
It looks like a great little, what are they meant to, it looks very familiar.
Well, yeah, we call it like an energy bite or a snack bite. I think we kind of...
It looks like a dessert, though.
Yeah, sometimes people say like, oh, your chocolate truffles. I'm like, well, there's no chocolate in there. But we are meant...
But sure.
Yeah, go for it. But yeah, I think we want to just really play off the senses, and we want you to have fun. I kind of, associated it to even like eating candy or something like that.
Yeah, well, it looks
that.
Like a dessert, and it has dates in it.
There's a reason that people...
It smells like dates, yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely a date base in there.
Here we go. It's delicious. I'm not like a food critic though, so I should have led with that, but, and probably people don't want to hear me chew, but it's delicious.
Yeah, I mean, food should be delicious. At the end of the day, we're doing what we're doing for nutritional and health benefits for people. Mm-hmm. We're doing it for sustainability reasons. We're doing it as a solution to decrease our reliance on meat. But if it doesn't taste delicious,
people won't eat
it. And it doesn't matter. Yeah, and people won't eat it.
That was really delicious. That just tasted, really, the dates came through.
Mm-hmm.
It's also, I would say, toothsome, so it's going to, it seems like it would be filling.
Yeah.
And like a really nice, sweet treat.
Yeah. And it's an energy bite, and there's no added sugar in there. So all the sweetness that you tasted came from the dates.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of fiber.
Yeah. And there's a lot of fiber in there. And it's great to actually receive protein in a snack form. We don't store protein, so it's something we need to replenish throughout the day. So this gives you an option to do that.
All right.
And now what you're holding is our cinnamon almond crunch granola.
Mm. I am a granola connoisseur.
So you went from not being a food critic, now you're a granola connoisseur.
Well, I'm a connoisseur of two things. I was going to say I'm a creature of habit when it comes to eating. So I think I've become quite boring in my old age, in terms of being an adventurous eater. And I pretty much have the same thing every day, including granola and yogurt. I really need to branch out. But that said, I've had a lot. I eat a lot. I'm the perfect customer for this granola because I eat a lot of it. All right. So want to tell us a little bit more about what's in it, what's in this granola?
Yeah, so this is our cinnamon almond crunch granola, and it's those flavors, and there's also some cinnamon in there. We use Vermont maple syrup. And
as a sweetener, the primary sweetener?
Yeah, and there's a little organic brown sugar in there as well. I know some people are have asked us to, take that out, but it's delicious.
It is delicious. Mm. This is delicious. It's got a more of a powder on it. Does that have anything to do with the cricket flour?
Yeah, so that is the cricket flour. And then there's some cinnamon that's sort of blended in there as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's delicious. I taste the nuttiness. Is it of the crickets?
Yeah, that's it. The crickets do add this sort of subtle, nutty flavor. There's sort of a deepness to them.
Mm-hmm.
They've been described to almost have a bit of an umami flavor to them.
Yeah, yeah.
And they really just kind of take the flavor to another level.
That was the best case. I feel like that was the best cricket experience I could have had for my first one. So I'm really excited about it.
Well, yeah, I'm happy you had a good first experience.
I'm going to take those. I'm going to take those with me, and I'm going to finish them when I'm not on air, and people don't have to suffer through the sounds of me eating. I realize that is maybe also not the best for podcasting, but I couldn't wait. I had to try them when I was here. And one of the things about these two particular products is that, I'm familiar with a few other brands who use, I would say, cricket inputs, and those seem to be less not like everyday foods that I would necessarily kind of come across in terms of energy bars or whatever. They seem to be more whole foods that I can kind of recognize. I know granola, obviously. Mm-hmm. What other products do you make?
Well, we have sort of our granola and our energy bites. Mm-hmm. You tried the coconut cashew energy bites. We also have honey and seeds, which is our only nut-free version.
Mm-hmm.
Great for sort of kids to take to school who aren't allowed to bring nuts.
Mm-hmm.
Or are allergic, as well as a banana PB&J. So just sort of a tried and true delicious flavor combination. And
so it's peanut butter.
It is. We actually don't use peanut butter in it, but we use peanuts.
Peanuts. Okay.
Yes. Essentially. All right. What does that make a peanut butter?
Okay. Got it. Mm-hmm.
And then we're coming out with a new line of products too. Should I tell you about them?
Yeah, you should tell us about them.
So to continue sort of to kind of hold people's hands and through sort of a delightful, joyous, delicious way to their path to eating more crickets,
mm-hmm.
We have a big partnership that we're going to be launching in partnership with chefs. Not one chef, two chefs, because that wouldn't tell the complete story,
mm-hmm.
but dozens of chefs from around the country, even a few global ones, who are all going to be cooking with our new line of baking flours. Yeah. So one of the things that we've heard on this journey is that people want to do more with our crickets. You know, what if, you know, they don't like cinnamon almond crunch granola?
Right.
Sometimes people say, I don't like coconut. So we want them to do whatever they want to do and to be able to incorporate crickets into sort of the center of the plate meals as well. So we're launching baking flours. So we're going to have an all-purpose, a gluten-free, and a paleo-keto blend, mm-hmm. as well as the 100% pure powder, which is great for anything with liquids such as shakes and smoothies.
Wow.
And all of the chefs that we're going to be working with are all cooking with our flours, and they're contributing a recipe to a cookbook. Mm-hmm. So we have sort of this beautiful designed cookbook, which is in the works. The campaign is out on Kickstarter.
Wow.
And yeah, people can, you know, check out the flours, can be the first to buy the limited edition cookbooks and see just the amazing, you know, chef lineup and sort of their individual stories and reasons for supporting this.
Who are some of the chefs? Can you give us, you know, a couple examples?
Yeah, of course. I'm just, you know, so like psyched and humbled with this chef team.
Yeah.
I never thought when I sort of started this venture some years ago that I would be in conversations with, you know, this amount of sort of talented chefs. And as a foodie myself, it's just amazing to be able to talk to, you know, some of your sort of heroes in the food world.
Absolutely.
So one of the chefs that I'm psyched about is Michael Anthony from Gramercy Tavern, mm-hmm. executive chef there for you know, over 15 years, I believe, you know, James Beard award-winning chef, Michelin star chef, and, you know, advocate for natural, sustainable food. He was formerly at Stone Barns before that. And we just had a really amazing conversation around it. He sort of, when we met in his restaurant, he sort of brought me in. I got to see the kitchen.
Oh my God.
And then we sat down in the private dining room there and talked for, you know, quite some time. And so I was introducing him to the first time of eating crickets. And he was just really interested in a deep level. And one of the things that I said to him that really sparked was, I talked about the fact that this is part of this future food conversation, but it's actually an ancient food.
You
know, crickets and other insects are really kind of some of the first food of mankind.
Really?
Definitely our first protein. It was sort of, you know, insect protein that we were able to sort of get strong on and sort of move up the chain. So
where did that really happen, like geographically speaking?
Well, all over, you know, where sort of, you know, humans were first settling them. And so we're really kind of going back to the basics, you could say, back to the basics, but by eating bugs. And, you know, as we're constantly looking to sort of solve different problems out there, we believe that we don't need to solve problems with the same tools that we use to get us into that, but rather to kind of, you know, go back to some of the earliest foods that we've been eating. So that sort of kind of all natural kind of approach sparked to him. So sorry to go on that tangent.
No, that's
but
great.
But it just blew me away sort of speaking to him. I can't even describe it.
That is incredible. Okay, so we're going to take a really quick commercial break and hear a word from our sponsors. But when we get back, I want to talk just another couple minutes about the sort of evolution of eating crickets and what that looked like historically. So stay tuned.
This episode is brought to you by Brooklyn Botanic Garden, a stunning 52-acre garden in the heart of Brooklyn, featuring spectacular plant displays year-round. On Thursday, August 23rd, Brooklyn Botanic Garden will host the Beer and Bocce Benefit, a one-of-a-kind garden party featuring lawn games, live music, and unlimited beer tastings by some of Brooklyn's top beer makers. Proceeds from the Beer and Bocce Benefit provide essential support for the garden's educational and community programs. And mark your calendars for the annual Chili Pepper Festival on Saturday, September 29th. New York's hottest fall tradition will set the garden ablaze with scorching bands from around the world, dozens of fiery food artisans, and hours of chili chocolate debauchery. Learn more about Brooklyn Botanic Garden at bbg.org.
And we're back on Eating Matters, where today I'm speaking with Robin Shapiro, who is the CEO and founder of Seek Food. All right. So when we, before the break, we were talking about a little bit about the history of, you know, the evolution of how we started to eat insects. And I asked the question about geography because of sort of like where the idea originated, because in my mind, it seems to be more of a Western concept or sorry, the opposite. It seems to be more of an Eastern concept and something that culturally we maybe it was like have evolved to think of, you know, to not be super selective about eating insects, whereas in the rest of the world, it seems to be much more common practice. So how did that kind of come to be, do you think?
Yeah, so right now, today, 80% of the world's nations are eating insects as a form of their diet. So it's popular in places in Asia, such as China, South Korea, Thailand, popular in African countries, as well as parts of South and Central America. Mm-hmm. Mexico is probably the place that's closest geographically to us that people point out having sort of an initial cricket eating experience. Chapulinas, sort of a sort of staple dish there, is grasshoppers that are sort of used in tacos, and really even high-end restaurants are serving even their escamoles, which are essentially like an ant caviar. And I should say as well, like this global perspective is also what we're bringing into our new launch too. So we have different Mexican chefs who are contributing, Mario Hernandez from the Black Ant, mm-hmm. But also Native American chefs. So we, as you just said, it's not really part of what we think of as sort of Western diets. But before we came here, there were insects that were consumed quite frequently on the land that we're living on today here in America. So we have an amazing Native American chef, Sean Sherman, the Sui chef, mm-hmm. Who is going to be cooking a very traditional, he's making a sort of a masa and cricket flour bison tamale. Mm. And yeah, it's delicious. We actually made it the other day and it was just incredible. And so I think it's important to actually talk about that conversation about how much insects were consumed here in America. Mm-hmm. Actually in Utah, in the Salt Lake area where there's a salt lake, mm-hmm. there is evidence of grasshoppers that were fossilized in caves there. And what sort of tribes were doing was essentially using wind and then the salt water to essentially have, you know, sun-dried grasshoppers. Wow. So you had this reliable year-round food supply. Yeah. And this evidence is still there today in caves. So, like I said, it was something that was practiced all around the world.
Mm-hmm. And I should have asked this at the top. I don't know if we touched on some of the specific environmental benefits of what eating crickets and then, I mean, insects at large have on our, you know, environment.
Yeah, so right now, we have sort of major environmental issues stemming from the agriculture industry, specifically, you know, the meat industry. And so here with crickets, we have sort of a whole other protein alternative. So crickets are using significantly less land, feed, and water than traditional protein sources. They emit virtually no greenhouse gases. Mm-hmm. Meat, as you know, one of sort of the major contributors, more than sort of transportation in many ways.
Yeah.
And crickets are using just sort of a fraction of feed water and land.
What are they fed?
So different crickets are fed different things. The crickets that we're using and sourcing from Mexico are fed alfalfa wheat.
Okay.
And some Mexican chefs that you'll talk to will say, hey, yeah, we forage for crickets and get them to eat ourselves or to serve in restaurants or to sell to others, and we go to the alfalfa fields to get them.
Oh.
So they're fed in the farming environments the same thing that they're eating in the wild.
All right. I want to talk a little bit about sort of the what it was like to start a company from, you know, startup CEO perspective, and then we'll transition to a few policy questions because I just can't help myself. I mean,
yeah.
You know, it's a food policy show. All right. So your background, it sounds like initially wasn't in food. So what was that transition like kind of to the food industry, and were there any unexpected challenges that you came across in that transition?
Yeah, so my background is in marketing and advertising. I worked mostly with beauty and fashion companies. My last job in the corporate world was as a marketing director at Ralph Lauren. And I think one of the, you know, for many people, it's like, wait, you went from working at Ralph Lauren to serving people crickets, obviously, right? But I think there is sort of... my sort of past professional life has really helped me because, you know, beauty and fashion is largely about branding and about image. And crickets, much more than polo shirts, need an image upgrade. Mm-hmm. So that sort of past has helped me here. And I've just always loved food. From, you know, the earliest times that I was watching my mom in the kitchen, helping her out, you know, cooking things with my sister who was, you know, older than me and sort of started cooking real food before me. I've just always been fascinated. And I think when I was younger, you know, we didn't have Heritage Radio and mm-hmm. things like that. And I didn't know all of the options out there. I didn't know you could be a food podcast host. And
it's a thing now.
It's a thing. And so I, you know, just had this always, you know, itch to do something in food. I'd considered going back to culinary school, all these different things, because it was something I just wasn't able to shake. Mm-hmm. And then I just, you know, took the jump. And that's when I sort of mentioned that I said, I want to do something in the world of food. I want to do something that is additive. And I want to do something that is going to sort of serve, you know, humanity over the long term. Mm-hmm. The way I saw it, the world was moving so quickly that, you know, something that is relevant today is sort of less so tomorrow. So I wanted to have something with some, develop something with some lasting power. So those were my three criteria. Mm-hmm. Now, people heard that I, you know, left the sort of world of sort of fashion and advertising, heard that I was like crazy. And then I would share, and people were like, well, what are you going to do? And so I'd share that criteria sometimes and then be like, so what are you going to do with that?
yeah.
And I was like,
okay, great. So what does that mean?
What does that mean?
Like, blank stares. Yeah. Like,
very blank stares. And I didn't know. So I just, you know, set out doing. If you don't know what you want to do, the best thing you can do is just
try,
you know, grab onto anything you can. And I got myself involved in a lot of really, really cool stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, the time I spent working at the rooftop farm on Eagle Street Rooftop Farm with Annie Novak, that was like a really amazing part of my life. Here I was, like, wearing boots on top of this farm in Greenpoint looking to Midtown Manhattan, where I was previously
working.
Commuting every day, and like it just never got old. It was like this wild experience to me. I was like chasing chickens around and like, you know, fertilizing with rabbit poop and like harvesting arugula.
Living the dream.
I can't even tell you. And people were so surprised because they had known my sort of career trajectory, and they're like, so are you like running the farm? And I was like, no.
Yeah, you've seen it. You got a great position, it seems like, at a really major fashion company.
Yeah. And I loved sticking my finger in the ground, putting a little seed in there.
Yeah.
Brushing, you know, the soil over and watering it. And I told people that's what I was doing. I was sort of being a farmer there. And through my time working at the Low Line, you know, where I spent, you know, 5 years really sort of, you know, building that nonprofit organization, really a whole new world kind of opened up to me. I had a lot of ideas. And this is the one that I really landed on. I felt like I had this kind of unspoken divide and conquer agreement. And if someone else was doing something that I thought was great, I was like, awesome. Like, you got that. Like, you keep doing that. This is what the world needs.
Yeah.
And if I saw an area that I truly believed in, that I felt needed to be moved forward in a different way, like, that's what I wanted to do. And I felt like this
was your calling.
Was my calling.
From a business perspective, how did you get started though? Like, are you self-funded? Have you sought investment, outside investment? What did that look like? And how tricky was that in terms of like, well, I mean, actually, first question, did you found it yourself or did you seek outside investment for this?
So I put an initial injection of money into the company. I think it's important to have some skin in the game.
Yeah.
We have also raised money from outside investors and we're doing a Kickstarter.
And you're doing Kickstarter. And how, besides the Kickstarter, I feel like Kickstarter is a great opportunity to really speak to an audience who understands what you're doing and is so supportive of it. In terms of like outside investors, was your initial reaction from them a little uncertain because it was such an unfamiliar kind of, you know, thing that you're doing, and culture change, right? Or do you think that a lot of people you spoke to are really into it from the start?
You know, I had some of the most inspiring conversations ever with, you know, all of the investors out there that I met with, even the ones that decided not to invest. And I think the ones that decided not to invest were not because of not believing in the sort of growth in potential, but wanting growth to happen quicker. And oftentimes that was when I was speaking to funds and they have a responsibility to the investors in their fund to sort of deliver a return in a certain amount of time. But the conversations I had were so inspiring. And, you know, we have a great team of investors, you know, that we've built up. Gary Vaynerchuk is one of our investors that I'm sort of very proud to, you know, have his, you know, support and belief and advisorship to what we're doing.
Awesome. So it seems like it was, you know, well received, and that must have been a really positive, encouraging feeling kind of from the beginning.
I mean, it's challenging. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like any fundraising.
Yeah, it's challenging. I'm not going to tell you that it was this easy thing. I'm saying I had inspiring conversations, but it's challenging in a lot of ways. You're right, fundraising in general, and we are still raising money, you know, outside of Kickstarter for the company as well.
Any plans to expand to other insects in the near future?
I think we've got our hands full with crickets right now on a personal level. Mm-hmm. My own sort of, you know, education and passion for learning everything that there is about insects continues. I oftentimes try to take trips around the world to visit different cultures that are consuming different insects. I took a really nice trip to Colombia, where I went to Bucaramanga, which is the Andes mountain region, where they're eating hormigas culonas. Hmm. And if you speak Spanish,
nope,
you know that hormigas culonas means big butt ants, and that's exactly what they are. And they're delicious.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of like popcorn. But so,
oh, I love popcorn though. I do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like Colombian popcorn. So what we're bringing out to the public under the Seek brand, it's really continue the evolution, education of crickets and cricket protein.
All right, so switching to food policy just quickly, what is the governing body in the U.S. that regulates your product?
So it's the FDA.
And has that been, what was that process like kind of launching, you know, launching this sort of a company and getting your, I mean, also like from a food safety perspective, what is required and what has that process looked like?
Yeah, so it's interesting. And I should say we have a really great sort of nonprofit organizing body helping to promote the expansion of edible insects called Little Herds. And so they charted out a lot of these efforts. But essentially, you know, the FDA and sort of as an industry, we're very well organized. We're sort of talking and realizing that, you know, for one person to succeed, you know, many of us need to. But essentially, the FDA sort of stance was pretty light.
Yeah.
You know, they said that the crickets need to be farmed and they need to be intended for food, for human consumption.
The kinds that you use.
Yes, sort of grown and intended for human consumption. And that's really it. There's a few other things that different farms are doing to have certain quality certifications. You know, grass certification, generally regarded as safe, requires a certain things that you're sort of following. But we're hyper aware and sensitive to all food safety issues. And, you know, you see outbreaks for like lettuce and spinach. I feel much more comfortable eating, you know, the crickets that we farm than food from untrusted sources.
Yep. What are any policy related issues you kind of, you know, foresee in the future happening with your products?
Well, I think that there is such tremendous environmental benefits to be gained from increasing our consumption of crickets. There'll also be an extremely affordable protein for American and, you know, people across the world to be able to have. But to really get to that scale where, you know, prices can come down, you know, we do need sort of, you know, help and growth with the industry. So the farm that we're working with in Mexico is actually subsidized, receiving subsidies from the Mexican government. So I think it is really kind of important to kind of think about, like, what can you have when food subsidies go to the right place?
Yeah.
I don't think we're going to be having that anytime soon in America, but I you know, if I had my way, we would see subsidies within the cricket farming industry.
Next farm bill. Fingers crossed. I mean, that could be in 5 years, because who knows when if this farm bill is going to get passed. I don't know. It could be this farm bill is what I'm trying to say. It could be this version. Okay, so last couple of questions. What is your preferred way to eat crickets? Is it through the, you know, the milling process, or just grab them and freeze them and fry them? Like, how, you know, your preferred method?
You know, I think it is with a lot of the recipes that I've tasted from the chefs that they're submitting. I love the sort of bison tamales. It's like so incredible. Also, a chef here locally in Brooklyn, TJ Steele from Claro, he contributed these tortilla chips. Mm-hmm. And they're just so good. Like,
so it's kind of ground up in the tortilla chips?
Yeah. Also with the masa flour there. And yeah, they're sort of, you know, delicious, super versatile. It adds sort of another depth to a traditional tortilla chip. But I don't know, you can kind of make any food a little bit healthier. And I love food that that is a food that you're sort of eating at the table, sharing with the people that you care about the most. Van Leeuwen's as well, they contributed an ice cream.
Did they really?
Yeah, so it's an Earl Grey cricket ice cream. And I thought that was like a really smart flavor pairing because of the earthiness that you get from tea.
Yeah.
It sort of went really well together. And there's even like a slight, like, I don't know, it feels like almost like a little purpley, you know, beigey color that is just really pretty in the ice cream too.
Ah, well, we eat with our eyes also.
Yeah.
And so that's really, really important. All right. Where can our listeners go to A, learn more about, you know, the work that you're doing at the company, and B, most importantly, find your products?
Yeah, well, the first place people can go is Kickstarter. If they just search for Seek Food, we will pop right up there. They can also find us at our website, which is seek-food.com, and on the Instagram, at SeekFood. And those are the same handles for Facebook and Twitter.
Awesome. Well, Robin, thank you so much for joining me in the studio today.
Yeah. Let's go party now.
We're going to go party. Bye. all right. Before we go outside, I want to give a big thanks to our sponsors, their generous support, as well as our engineer, the one and only Matt Patterson. Show music is by the very talented Tim Archer. All episodes of Eating Matters are available on the Heritage Radio Network website or as a podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe and leave us a comment. Let us know what you think. I'm Jenna Liute, and thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awaili, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.